Miracles from Dokusan with Dogen. Those who see and hear the inconceivable function of miracles do not fail to attain the way. Zen Master Dogen. One Zen story tells us that the Buddha and his disciples once camped near another teacher and his students. A student of the other teacher noticed the Buddha's encampment. He came over and inquired of the Buddha's disciples, "Can your master perform any miracles?" He went on to proudly state that his master was quite talented. "My master can stand on one side of a river and make brush strokes in the air, and they will appear on a blank page being held by a person on the other side of the river." The Buddha's disciples listened politely. Then he stated that his teacher was also capable of performing amazing feats. When he wants to go somewhere, he just walks. And when he's hungry, he just eats. And when he's tired, he just sleeps. The first student was humbled, and as he left, he vowed to himself to attain such miraculous powers, even if it took him 10,000 lifetimes. I like to imagine that if Master Dogen were to hear this story, he might say, "That other teacher's disciple was no ordinary fellow. He understood the difference between a greater and lesser miracle." If we were to look up the word miracle in the dictionary, we'll find several definitions. The first one, I believe, is our usual understanding: a rare, inexplicable event attributed to supernatural powers, like a person making marks on one side of a river and having them appear on the other side. The last definition given is from the Latin root word miraculum, miracle, to wonder at. And it is from this definition, I think, that we need to explore Master Dogen's meaning when he talks about miracles. This is what Zen Master Dogen had to say about the difference between greater and lesser miracles. Encompassed by the power of great miracles, lesser miracles occur. Great miracles include lesser miracles, but lesser miracles do not know great miracles. Lesser miracles are a tuft of hair breathing in the vast ocean, a mustard seed storing Mount Sumeru, the top of the head spouting water, or the feet spreading fire. Miracles like these are lesser miracles. Those who practice them never dream of Buddha miracles. The reason I call them lesser miracles is that they are limited by circumstance and depend on special practice and realizations. They may occur in this lifetime, but not in another lifetime. They may be available to some people, but not to others. They may appear in this land, but not elsewhere. They may appear at times other than the present moment, but not at the present moment. Great miracles are not like that. Great miracles are not like that. Dogen does not define great miracles, but we can infer that great miracles are not limited by circumstance, do not depend upon special practice and realizations, occur in all lifetimes, are available to all people in all lands, and appear at every moment. The miracle I am speaking of are the daily activities of the Buddhas, which they do not neglect to practice. The daily activities of Buddhas: walking, eating, sleeping. Dogen cautions us, "Do not think that miracles sometimes do and sometimes do not happen. Buddhas always abide in miracles." In his fascicle on miracles, Dogen relates the famous pronouncement of layman Pangyan: "Miracles are nothing other than fetching water and carrying firewood." Dogen comments, "You should thoroughly investigate the meaning of these words. Those who practice this are all miracle Buddhas, those who fetch water and carry firewood. Although miracles are noticed once in a while, miracles are miracles. It is not that things are eliminated or perish when they go unnoticed. Things are just what they are, even when unnoticed. Even when people do not know that fetching water is a miracle, the fact that fetching water is a miracle is undeniable." I'm taken by the statement, "Things are just as they are, even when unnoticed." and I have to ask myself, how is it that miracles go unnoticed? The answer, in my case at least, is that I become habituated by thought to my experience. My attention wanes, things are done by rote, I cease to wonder at, and therefore do not experience miracles. Buddhas always abide in miracles, because Buddhas are awake, and things don't go unnoticed. The next question seems to be, well, how do we cultivate wonder so we can awaken? Part of the answer, I think, lies in learning to stand in I don't know. This I don't know is not our usual experience of not knowing. It is not confusion or perplexity. What is meant by I don't know here is beyond knowing or not knowing. It is Bodhidharma's answer to the emperor. What I mean by standing in I don't know is this. It is to witness, unperturbed, the unlimited experience of the present, and in our absolute aloneness, find physical connection to the vastness of the universe, which is our self. I remember Katagiri Roshi once saying, what causes us problems in our lives is not that we don't understand our limitations. It is that we don't recognize our vastness. Terms like the truth, the absolute, ultimate reality, and emptiness are always associated with words like unthinkable, indescribable, ungraspable, inconceivable, indecipherable, or unknowable. Yet in Zen we are told truth can and must be experienced. This experience is to realize suchness, and the gateway to suchness is to stand in I don't know and wonder. We all have had experience stolen moments of suchness, particularly after Zazen, when the flimsy film of self, that tenacious sense of separateness, cracks open, and for a moment we see the world through different eyes. And accompanying that seeing is a wellspring of gratitude and a fierce tenderness for the world. Zen Master Han Ji instructs, with thoughts clear, sitting silently, wander into the center of the circle of wonder. This is how you must penetrate and study. There are times when we are shocked into not knowing. Some time back, I had such an experience. The following quotation from a New York Times article was cited in a book I was reading. The subject of the article was the discovery of the largest galaxy ever detected by astronomers at Kitt Peak National Observatory, and it reminded me of something out of an Arthur C. Clarke novel. It reads, the galaxy includes more than 100 trillion stars and measures more than 6 million light years in diameter. A galaxy is 60 times the size of Earth's own galaxy, the Milky Way. The newfound galaxy is located in the center of an even larger clump, a cluster of some 1,000 galaxies called Abel 2029. The Abel 2029 is the Arthur C. Clarke Association. I stopped reading there because I realized I just couldn't get my mind around 100 trillion. I had no way of relating to how big even 1 trillion is, really. My frame of reference is big, bigger, and biggest. I know a trillion is beyond my conception of biggest, but I have no real grasp of it. And after making this point with my husband, he helped me by asking, if you counted one number per second, how long would it take you to get to 100? Give up? I did. How does 32,000 years strike you? And remember, that's only 1 trillion. And the galaxy has 100 trillion stars. Well, now the article got really interesting. Since there doesn't appear to be enough ordinary matter in the universe to account for the huge gravitational forces that would seem necessary to cause all the clumping, scientists propose that existence of vast amounts of invisible matter that elude detection because it emits no radiation. According to the prevailing wisdom, some 99% of the universe consists of this missing mass, which means that what is generally thought of as astronomy, actually concerns only a tiny subset of particles that happen to be detectable by the human nervous system. Well, I don't know about you, but that bit of information stops me in my tracks every time I think of it. The first time I read it, I was immediately reminded of something I hadn't thought of in years. Do you remember the Dr. Seuss story, Horton Hears a Who? On the 15th of May in the jungle of Newell, in the heat of the day, in the cool of the pool, he was splashing, enjoying the jungle's great joys, when Horton the elephant heard a small noise. So Horton stopped splashing. He looked toward the sound. "That's funny," thought Horton. "There's no one around." Then he heard it again, just a very faint yelp, as if some tiny person was calling for help. "I'll help you," said Horton, "but who are you, where?" He looked and he looked, and he could see nothing there but a small speck of dust blowing past in the air. Our hero, Horton, has no designs on becoming a Buddha, yet into his field of awareness floats a world of beings on a speck of dust, and he is filled with compassion for them. He recognizes that their world is totally out of their control. They are the Who from Whoville, and he vows to save them. This vow becomes a problem for Horton, because the other animals make fun of him for guarding a speck of dust. They keep snatching it away. Horton has a terrible time chasing after them to protect the Who. Still, he is resolute in his vow and repeatedly triumphs over the mischief of the other animals. But now, instead of taunting him, the others begin to worry about Horton. They decide his efforts to protect this speck of dust are nonsense, and they devise a plan to save him from himself. They combine their efforts to capture him, tie him up, and grab the dandelion fluff that holds the Who. They warn Horton that if he doesn't stop talking to this dust mote, they'll drop him in a pot of boiling bezel nut oil. Horton admonishes them that they can't do that because tiny beings are living on it. And after all, a person's a person, no matter how small. Horton turns to the Who, and he tells the mayor of Whoville that the Who have to make a lot of noise so the other animals will know they're there. Otherwise, they're literally in the soup. So the mayor of Whoville gets out the alarm, and everyone starts making noise. They bang on drums and pot lids, they play all their musical instruments, yell and holler. They make quite a racket, but the other animals still don't hear them. In desperation, Horton asks the mayor to check and see if everyone's doing all they can. So the mayor runs around checking, making sure no one is shirking. And just when he's about to give up hope, there in apartment 12J is little Jojo, playing with a yo-yo, not making a sound. The mayor grabs him, imploring, "Laddie, what are you doing? It's Whoville's darkest hour." And he spirits him to the top of the highest building in Whoville. Little Jojo makes his little beep or peep or chirp, and of course, it puts them over the top. The other animals hear the Who, and they all bow to protect them. It's a satisfying ending, I suppose, if you don't happen to be a Zen student. You see, if you're a Zen student, you're left with a dilemma. Did little Jojo save all beings or not? Well, we can't say he really saved all beings. After all, he had help from myriad sources, other Whos, drums, and pot lids, and some beings he couldn't even see or begin to imagine, such as Horton. But then again, we can't say he didn't now, can we? So there you have it. The story brings home the meaning of one of my favorite statements by Gandhi. What you do will be insignificant, and it's very important that you do it. I have to admit that when I was reading the story to my children years ago, I wasn't aware of these deeper implications. If anything, I guess I would have identified with Horton. Today I see I'm really more like Jojo. Metaphorically, I spend a great deal of time playing with a yo-yo, and I ignore the great matter of birth and death. Now I'm going to tell you something that feels risky to say out loud and might sound a little crazy. But I haven't been the same since reading that galaxy quote. That subparticle business got to me. 99% of the universe is made up of a mass undetectable by the nervous system of a human being? Geez, it's even bigger than I didn't understand before. Through the article, I touched again the real meaning of inconceivable, and by doing that in an inexplicable, paradoxical way, I found my place. I know without a doubt, in fact, I cannot escape knowing, that I'm a who. And that's okay. I'm not diminished in the slightest, because after all, a person's a person, no matter how small. But it does make this who wonder, what have we gotten ourselves into here? I mean, really, what is this experience we call human life? Can there be any other response other than, I don't know? It comforts me to know that the Buddha and all the ancestors found themselves in the exact same predicament. Stories of the ancient masters offer clues for solving the koan of human experience. In his fascicle on miracles, Dogen relates the following public case regarding Master Guishan and his two disciples, Yangshan Weiji and Xianyan. One day, while Guishan was laying down, Yangshan Weiji came to see him. Guishan turned to face the wall. Yangshan said, I'm your student. Please don't be formal. And Guishan started to get up, and Yangshan rose to leave. Guishan said, Weiji, and Yangshan returned. Guishan said, let me tell you about my dream. And Yangshan leaned forward to listen. Guishan simply said, would you interpret my dream for me? I want to see how you do it. And in response, Yangshan brought a basin of water and a towel. Guishan washed his face and sat up. Then Xianyan came in, and Guishan said, Weiji and I have been communicating intimately. This is no small matter. And Xianyan said, I was next door and heard you. Guishan said to him, well, why don't you try now? And Xianyan made a bowl of tea and brought it to him. Guishan praised them, saying, you two students surpass even Shariputra and Magda Magdalena with your miraculous activity. Now, what are we to make of that? Guishan tells them that they surpassed the chief disciples of the Buddha with their miraculous activity. Shariputra and Magda Magdalena, the Buddha's chief disciples, were reputed to have great miraculous powers, including those of the lesser variety. But according to Dogen, Guishan seems to find lesser miracles by the definitions covered earlier. Dogen informs us, if you want to understand Buddha's miracles, you should study Guishan's work, as this is no small matter. To practice miracles is to study the Buddha way. Not practicing miracles is not studying the Buddha way. I take that to mean that letting miracles go unnoticed is not practicing the Buddha way. Dogen tells us that all the actions of Guishan are miracles and that they are unsurpassable. They include lying down, turning to face the wall, getting up, calling Weiji, talking about the dream, washing his face, and sitting up. Guishan describes their interaction as communicating intimately. Dogen comments, you should study these miracles. The ancestors who correctly transmitted Buddha Dharma talked this way. Do not merely interpret it as Guishan expressing his dream by washing his face. You should regard their interaction as a series of miracles. The miracles I am speaking of are the daily activities of Buddhas, which they do not neglect to practice. Not neglecting to practice means not taking the miracles of daily activities for granted. Guishan and his disciples are awake to each other in the moment, and each recognizes the other as being so. And that is why Guishan says they have been communicating intimately. To awaken is to wonder. To wonder is to awaken. To awaken is to be fully present, fully open to the present, and to be open to the present is to be intimate with our life. To be intimate with our life is no small matter. Can we learn to practice Buddha miracles? Do we understand the difference between greater and lesser miracles to make Guishan proud of our miraculous activity? Can we become disciples of Guishan and communicate intimately? Can we appreciate that taking our life for granted is missing the fact that our daily activities are Buddha miracles and no small matter? There is a line from a beautiful Mary Oliver poem where she's considering her life and states, "When it's over, I want to say, all my life I was a bride married to amazement." As many times as I read that line, it never fails to move me. And a little voice within says, "Ah, me too, Mary, me too." And another voice asks, "So what's stopping you?" And then Master Dogen comes and whispers, "If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay." And then I think, what if we could all be brides and grooms married to amazement? What if we really lived our lives from the understanding that everything we experience is a greater miracle? Zen Master Dogen says, "Those who see and hear the inconceivable function of miracles do not fail to attain the way."